Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Rise of the Resistance cast preview and opening in Florida. What does that mean for Disneyland? The Haunted Mansion extended before refurbishment.
New merchandise colors, author signings, some four-legged friends retire, we finish our chat with Bob, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of December 11th, 2019. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tig Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to all of our patrons for supporting the show. And we welcome Jill M. at the annual pass holder level this week. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live shows, some DL Weekly swag, and more. If you'd like to learn more, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
And speaking of patron perks, it is that time of the month for us to pick a name out of our Mickey Ears hat to see who our next either patron guest, or if you'd like to choose our next discussion topic, you get that opportunity as well. So drum roll, please. Congratulations to Kirsten R. So you have the opportunity to either be a guest on one of our shows coming up or to suggest and pick what one of our discussion topics will be. So congratulations.
Well, have you taken advantage of the free year of touring plans yet? Why not? It's as easy as contacting concierge to book your next Disney vacation. James and Mike would love to provide you with this excellent service, along with helping you plan a great Disney vacation at no additional cost to you. You already know you want to go to the parks, so why not contact concierge and get the planning started? Remember that dining reservations start at the 90-day mark, so they can help you with those as well. So the earlier you get started, the better.
Now let's get to the news. This week, the cast of Star Wars Rise of Skywalker got to preview the Rise of the Resistance attraction at Disneyland. Director J.J. Abrams and film star Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, Anthony Daniels, Naomi Ackie, Keri Russell, and Kelly Marie Tran were all in attendance.
So this is kind of interesting because we all know that the Rise of the Resistance opened in Florida this week. And so I would have thought that all of them would be in Florida at the version that's open, but apparently they were probably too busy with cast member previews and all that stuff, so they got to go look around the attraction in California that is still kind of getting ready for its opening next month.
You know, I think that was a much cooler experience, personally, to be going into an attraction before the public has seen it versus going to an attraction when it's opening to the public or right before it's opening to the public, because they probably got a little bit of the behind the scenes kind of peeking, because I'm sure everything isn't 100% set and ready to go yet. It's probably good enough that they got to ride through it, but they probably got to see, like I said, a little bit behind the Disney curtain.
Well, the video that Disney posted was kind of funny because there was a time where John Boyega, who plays Finn, and Oscar Isaac, who plays Poe, we're in for this video, and they pointed up at one of the TIE fighters that's up on the wall, and they're like, "Oh, you remember that? That's where it all started, because that's where their characters met in the movie." Yeah. So it's kind of interesting to see them all kind of there. I mean, this attraction just looks amazing. It's so cool that I'm really jealous of them being able to kind of go experience it, even though the attraction itself wasn't ready yet. But to be there, that would have been so cool. Well, this week, Star Wars Rise of the Resistance opened over in Disney's Hollywood Studios in Florida. The crowds that never materialized at Disneyland for Galaxy's Edge certainly did over in Florida. The attraction itself appears to be living up to its rumored greatness. Reservations for the attraction were gone for the entire day by 8 a.m. when the park officially opened to the public.
Wow.
So they did the same thing that Disneyland did. They had reservations. Instead of for the land, they actually had reservations for the attraction.
That makes sense.
They said that there was no standby queue and no fast pass. The only way to experience the attraction was to get this reservation to be in a boarding group. Mm-hmm. And there was people that got there at like 3 a.m. and they didn't get on the attraction until like 11 a.m. So, and there's people that got there almost at 8 a.m. And they didn't get to ride till the park almost closed.
So how does that work with the reservation system? So people at 3 a.m., how are they able to kind of get the reservation?
It opens in the app, so mm-hmm. people just have to wait till it shows up in the app for the day.
Keep refreshing. Yep.
And then they do just like they were going to do at Disneyland, where they say, you know, join boarding group, and then you get a boarding group number. And then throughout the park and in your app, it'll tell you when it's your turn to go in. Now, one thing that they did have happen, one of the people I watch online, Mickey Views, he actually had a reservation, mm-hmm. and it came up. It was like boarding group 18 or something. He got in the queue. He was actually the last person that they allowed into the queue. They stopped letting people in behind him. He got in the line. They were kind of in the queue section, waiting to like enter the attraction. And they said, the first order has found us. We need you all to evacuate the queue. We need to whatever. So I guess they were having some problems. They did get a boarding pass renewed. So basically, whenever they wanted to come back later, when it was back up, they could. So kind of like an anytime fast pass kind of thing. But they were having some problems with the attraction.
Before we get into the spoilerness, because that's going to be all Tag, because he loves spoilers. I try and stay spoiler free. So what do you think's going to happen at Disneyland? Do you think we're going to have the same kind of like surge of people trying to get to it? Or do you think it's going to be a slow trickle?
Nope. I think it's going to be exactly like Florida. I think that they're going to use the boarding group system again, which I think actually did work pretty well.
The boarding thing is brilliant because you're not standing and wasting your whole day in a line.
Well, and they told people, they said, if you are not a member of a boarding group, don't bother going and standing near the attraction because you're not going to get in. There's no standby and there's no fast pass.
Yeah.
So literally, unless you have you're part of a boarding group, you're not getting on the attraction. So they told people, they're like, Hollywood Studios, they opened the park early. They opened at like 4 a.m., they didn't open the attraction until closer, I want to say between like 6 and 7 a.m., the Rise of Resistance. Yeah. But what they told people is they said, we've opened Tower of Terror for you, and we've opened, Smuggler's Run, I think was the other one.
Okay.
And they said, so you guys can go ride those attractions right now while you wait for your boarding party to come up. Mm-hmm. So I think Disneyland's going to have the same thing. And I'll tell you what, I'm sure that there's a bunch of people who have seen videos and stuff from Florida already, like I have, that definitely, if they're in the Southern California area, if they're annual pass holders, they're going to want to be there that opening day.
I think it's interesting because, you know, as much as the crowds didn't appear right at first for Galaxy's Edge when it opened in Disneyland, like was expected. Again, we've talked about this. This is kind of a dead horse that we've beaten.
Sure.
But, you know, we feel like it was hyped up so much that it really scared a lot of people away.
Yeah.
But I do think that because everybody that goes to Disney World got to see and got this kind of like the preview of what to expect for Galaxy's Edge, that did build excitement for Florida. And I think that's why they have more people that visit that park. But I think having ours open first built the excitement more for them. And I think the opposite's going to happen now for us since they've got this attraction first. All it's doing is building our excitement.
Sure.
And so I think you're right. I think it's going to be crazy.
I'm still a little bitter that theirs opened first. But I understand why.
You know
what
though?
Happened.
I'm looking at it positively. They're working out all the bugs.
That's true. That's true. So the next like 2 to 3 minutes of podcast, skip ahead because I'm going to talk about some spoilers here. So this attraction looks amazing. So you basically go in. The queue looks nice. You go in through the queue. You feel like you're in a rebel base, like you've seen in all the Star Wars movies, right? They got those plastic boards with like the saddle, whatever. So you're in those areas. You get in this area, and the very first special effect that I saw in one of these videos, I was already like, this attraction. Because you know, it's gonna be so simple, you're gonna laugh what it is. So you go in the first room, and BB-8's there, and BB-8 looks cool. Rey appears on a hologram, and it looks like a freaking hologram out of the movie.
Oh, that's cool.
And Rey talks to you and like says like, you know, you got to join the resistance, blah, blah, blah.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
No, that's Leia. Anyway,
I know.
Anyway, so BB-8 like leaves and this door opens and it's outside. You go back outside and you go from the base past Poe's X-Wing with BB-8 in it now. And you go into this transport that is also outside. So you get in the transport. The Mon Calamarian dude's there. Nine Nub is there. You're standing, so there's not going to be a lot of movement here. Mm-hmm. A lot of the screens where you can kind of see that you're flying, I'm doing air quotes here, are small. So this isn't something that, like, it's kind of like a just to kind of wet your, like, appetite for the attraction. But basically, you take off, and you get away from Galaxy's Edge and you're above Batu and you're getting ready to jump or to go into hyperspace, and the First Order shows up and you get captured and they pull you onto the thing and the door opens and you're on the Star Destroyer.
So you still actually haven't boarded a ride vehicle yet.
Well, technically that thing is a ride vehicle because it moves.
Oh, I suppose.
It's kind of like a really tame version of Star Tours, okay?
Sure. Yeah.
So the doors open, you're in the giant hangar that you've seen all the pictures of with all the stormtroopers, and I was wondering how this was going to work. The doors open and First Order cast members come and they say, you need to be interrogated, like they're in full character. Hmm. And they get you to go and you go through the hangar area and you go down, and this is where the kind of ride of it starts. So you go down this hallway and they put you, they set you into colors and they put you in different colored holding cells. So you go into the holding cell, the door closes behind you. You're in kind of a small group of, I think, like 8 people. And above you is kind of a projected thing of Kylo Ren and the dude with the red hair from the movies, I can't remember, General Hux. And they're kind of talking to you for a minute and they get called away to the bridge. Something happens. People have not been spoiling this. It is kind of a cool effect, so I won't spoil it, even though I've already said there's going to be spoilers. There's a way you escape this interrogation room.
Sure.
You get right onto the into these droid vehicles, the trackless system, right? Which is
pretty
cool.
Wow, so now you're getting into the
vehicle? Now you're getting into the vehicle.
Wow.
And the cool thing is, so a lot of times with safety spiels, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, please keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside while the thing is moving, blah, blah. It is your commander dude, the Calamarian dude, was like, quick, get in the thing. And like, it's very fast. It's like, please keep your hands, arms, feet, legs inside at all times. Like, it sounds like part of the theme. Like, it's
that's
really
neat.
Theme. Well, mm-hmm. they don't do a Spanish version. So that'll be interesting because I feel like that's something they always do. So weird. But so you get in this and you start moving and you go in this kind of big room and you're kind of moving around. And then you end up. I'm trying to remember the order of things because everything gets kind of crazy here. At some point, you get into the room with the big AT-ATs, and they're firing at you, and you get in a lift, and you are watching the AT-ATs, and you are going up in this lift, so you get up to the level of the AT-ATs, which is super cool. Things are firing at you. Let me go back. I think before you get to the AT-AT room, you actually go up to the bridge, and Kylo Ren and Hux sees you, and you kind of make an escape. And so anyway, so you go up this thing and then you go past, there's these giant cannons firing out at the rebel ships outside and you're kind of going past in your vehicle and you get to this other thing and Kylo Ren finds you and he's, I think, force pulling your ride vehicle and he's like, you'll tell me where the resistance base is. And then I won't give this away. There's something happens. You get away from Kylo Ren and you get into get into the escape pods. Well, your ride vehicle actually goes into an escape pod.
Huh.
And you see other escape pods in your like bay out the window and they drop and then you drop and then what you see is you kind of go through a battle and then you go back down to Batuu and you go through Batuu and you kind of crash in that kind of domey area that you can see from the construction pictures.
Oh, sure.
And you get out of your escape pod. You're still in the ride vehicle
mm-hmm.
and you're outside again. And that's where the ride exits, is in that kind of domed area outside. And you get off there. And then you exit into land. So this attraction, oh my goodness. I'm so excited for this attraction. I cannot wait to experience this. I think it's Disney. Mwah, they've done great.
See,
what do you think after my crazy explanation?
So you're super excited about this. I'm not super visual on things, so I still don't really know what to expect.
Okay.
I know I can expect dropping and being outside and not being in a ride vehicle right away. That part, I don't know. That's really intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel like you've spoiled it for me. And I'm very proud of you for not going into like the deep spoilers.
You know, to be honest, the first one where you get out of that, where they break you out, like some people were like, oh, it's so awesome. And then like, I watched the video of it and I saw what the effect was.
Video.
And I was like, yeah. I saw the effect and I was like I get why people think this is cool. Maybe in person it is way cooler.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, these animatronics, super smooth. The cast members, I gotta give it to the cast members because cast members are like 110% in character in this attraction. Like they are pushing you around like they are First Order and you are rebel scum. Or resistance scum, I guess, in this case.
So the only time that you have the cast members in costume is that when you first get into that hangar and they're
Yeah.
Stormtroopers.
And they work and they put you into the holding cells.
Got it.
And then, yeah, and then everything else is either animatronics or projection screens. They didn't do like Universal. They don't have a ton of projection screens.
Good.
It's done in a way that's really good.
Nice.
That projection with Rey that looks like a hologram was, I just can't get over that. Of course, BB-8, you know, we talk all the time about how in Guardians of the Galaxy, how much Rocket looks really good. Yeah. BB-8 looks great.
Yeah.
So... very cool. I love the fact that they go from inside to outside to inside to outside because, like,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's super cool. I wondered how that was going to work, like, in Florida. I'm trying to imagine riding this attraction when there's, like, a death torrential rain in Florida in this land because, like, it's pretty terrible. And, like, that section where you leave the briefing and get into the first vehicle, that's out in the open. There's no cover. So. I'm interested to see if people have videos of when it storms in Florida. But, of course, in Southern California, I don't think that's going to be a problem very often. But I'll tell you what, if Galaxy's Edge would have opened with this attraction and Millennium Falcon, I think we would have seen the crazy crowds.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
So does this make you excited to go on this more?
I was excited before.
Okay.
Just because it's so different and it's got so many different pieces and it's not your standard attraction.
I am just glad that they pulled it off because I was worried that there was so much hype for it that the execution could never live up to the hype.
Right.
And I actually think that it did, and which really surprised me. And that's why I'm so excited about it because, like, literally, like, Millennium Falcon actually didn't quite meet my expectations. I kind of thought it'd be a little, when you're controlling the Millennium Falcon, I thought you would control it more than you can.
Yeah, I thought that you were controlling it the whole time and just not in certain sections. I still was so impressed with the queue.
It still is cool.
The queue was my favorite part.
Oh, yeah. Well, wait till you see this queue.
Well, moving on from Star Wars Galaxy's Edge news, this past weekend was the traditional candlelight processional at Disneyland. Lin-Manuel Miranda was the guest narrator this year. There was concern that the ceremony could be rained out, but luckily that didn't happen. If you are interested in seeing what this year's ceremony looked like, there are a number of videos online that we have linked in our show notes.
So it's so funny because we talked about last week how, like, it's almost impossible to get tickets to this.
Mm-hmm.
I swear, every online people that talk about Disney had somebody that was in the audience because they were all different ones.
Yeah.
And they were everywhere. And I was like, man, even compared to, like, in the past, there's a lot more. It's crazy. This is on my bucket list. I feel like, I don't know how we would do it necessarily, but we have to get there sometime.
I do want to say this, not to brag, but kind of to brag. I think that it's very cool that ours is outdoors with, like, the train as the the train station as the background, trumpeters on top of the train station, and, like, just being in that town square area.
Sure.
I think it's nice that they also do this at Disney World. They do it in Epcot. However, bonus for them, it is multiple nights and not ours. But it is indoors, so I just don't think it'd be as spectacular indoors.
Everything that we do at Disneyland, like Fantasmic, like the candlelight processional, it's so cool that they take something that, like, you walk through and past every day and turn it into something magical.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes it even cooler. Mm-hmm. And you're totally right. Mm-hmm. Well, Teresa, I've got some good news and some bad news coming from the resort about the Haunted Mansion in early 2020.
I know, I'm very nervous about this.
First, the good news. For those of you who are fans of the Haunted Mansion holiday, it has been extended until January 21st, 2020, while It's a Small World undergoes its transformation back to the non-holiday overlay. Now the bad news. The Haunted Mansion will be down for months after the holiday version closes for a lengthy refurbishment. The Haunted Mansion joins Snow White's Scary Adventures and the Indiana Jones Adventure this spring for refurbishments.
Again, like I've said for all the... I'm not as nervous for Snow White's refurb and for Indy's refurb.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a little nervous about the Haunted Mansion's refurb. And I think that's because...
It's your baby.
It will, yes, but I... It's perfect. What do they need to change about it? No, I'm just kidding. But
I don't,
you know,
think
I just
changing.
I just, but for things to be down for as long as it is, they're swapping stuff out. So I'm curious what the upgrades are going to be on this, because there's nothing that jumps to mind really for me that's like, oh, they've got to be redoing this, or oh, they must be redoing that. I will say the one thing that if I could change in the Haunted Mansion, I would change the bus. I don't like the projections currently that they have on the bus in the graveyard scene. So I do hope that gets upgraded.
What do you think about the I feel like if they're going to change something, they should change the boarding area with the Doom Buggies, because there's nothing kind of there. Yep. Do you think that that temporary wall that was there is related to something preparing for this?
Perhaps. I think that that temporary wall that they had in the... We're talking about after you get off the elevator and you're kind of going down the hallway that has all the portraits in it, they had a temporary wall up in front of where the portraits were. I think that was just maybe either technical issues with the screens, or they were swapping out screens. I don't know if that's related necessarily.
I think this refurbishment will be just like they're doing with Indiana Jones, where I think that like there's probably a lot of things that they just need to like maintain and do like heavy maintenance on.
Yeah, I suppose.
Maybe replace some animatronics, maybe replace some lighting, stuff that like takes longer than like a normal, we're swapping it from holiday to regular. So I'm hoping that it'll just be like making it look pristine.
I'm sure they're just going to be plussing it. But I just, like I said, it's not as obvious to me what they'd be plussing. There are a couple things in Indy that I think are looking a little dated more so.
Sure.
I guess it's harder to pinpoint stuff in the Haunted Mansion, because if it doesn't look perfect, it works.
Fits in. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, So I don't know. So I'm optimistic and also nervous.
As you should be.
Well, a new limited release pin that I'm awkwardly very excited about has arrived for the holidays at Pin Traders in Disneyland. The Melikalikin Maka pin is limited to 4,000 and priced at $17.99. The pin features four parrots dressed in their holiday best.
What gets you so excited about this?
This is my favorite Christmas song.
Oh, okay.
It's my favorite Christmas song, and it's themed to the tiki room. So I find it so adorable, because it looks like four birds sitting on a perch together. They've got Santa hats on, they've got scarves on, and then they've got, I don't know, these little Christmas lights kind of draped around their perch. It's adorable. I don't know why I'm like nerdily excited about
that. I had to keep looking at
Disney
this
nerd excited about this.
I swore that this was the birds from the tiki room. Like, I could not find any reason but they look kind of like them.
No, that would make total... So do you... it's so hard for me to say it. It's Hawaiian. So that would make, you know, make sense.
Tropical,
with,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know. It just made me think of that. And it's
not like specifically, oh, that's Jose. You know, it's not 100%, but they definitely look like tiki room birds.
Sure.
The perch looks very much like a tiki room
type
perch.
Well, maybe they probably won't, because it's only 4,000 of them, but maybe when we go. Well, the latest color of merchandise has come to the resort and online at shopdisney.com. I don't know how to feel about this one. Belle of the Ball Bronze is themed off of Beauty and the Beast. Belle spelt like Belle from the movie. Items with this new color include a sweatshirt, a woman's t-shirt, mini backpack, leggings, and more.
And so much more. You know, I think it's a pretty color. It's... to me, it reminds me of rose gold, but just like a deeper, darker, richer color.
Hmm. I know I'm probably like in the minority here, but like I'm kind of just over all of these colors at this point. Like I feel like they've already done all the cool ones that like stand out as something that you would like immediately think of. I don't know. I don't. I'm sure that they'll come out with another one that I'm excited about at some point, but. Potion Purple
is
great, but they've already done it, is what I'm saying.
No, I know.
So I think they've already done all the cool ones.
We haven't gotten like a really cool like aqua-y color
Didn't we get one with
like a
the Little Mermaid one
color?
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I don't know. I think it's a fun color. I think that it's interesting that they kind of keep doing this. The one thing I'm not as big of a fan on, and it's just me personally, is there's just so much merch that they come out, so much merch, and then somehow they roll food into it too. So,
oh yeah,
it's always
like the rose gold,
it's interesting,
because
sometimes sometimes it works, but then other times it doesn't work. But in my opinion, but then again, that's just my opinion. I'm sure somebody gets really excited about the merch or the food that I don't find as appealing. Well, One Day at Disney has premiered on Disney Plus, which if you haven't watched it yet, fantastic. And in book form. If you want to get your copy of the book signed, there is an opportunity on December 14th. Author Bruce Steele and special guests will be at Disneyana from 10 a.m. to noon, then over at the Wonderground Gallery from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. I'm curious as to who the special guests are. They have not announced that yet.
It's kind of an interesting one. It's like special guests. I assume that it could be people that were also featured in One Day at Disney.
Yep, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
I hope
some great characters in there.
I hope it's the animator. He was my favorite. I don't know why.
We saw him at D23.
Yep, we did see him at D23. He just is so passionate and so excited and so humble.
So something that I'm going to mention about One Day at Disney, which is not exactly related to this, but it might encourage you to either watch it or get it in book form. One Day at Disney, I thought was pretty good. They kind of follow certain people throughout mm-hmm. the Disney company. It starts out with Bob Iger having like a meeting with the animation people or somebody at Pixar or something. They have like a meeting, and it's just kind of cool to see like what kind of his day kind of seems like a little bit. They talk to, of course, the Disney animator, like we said. They talk to one of the engineers of the Disneyland Railroad, which I thought was super cool. And to kind of, and it goes into their stories of like why they got where they wanted to be and what they thought about Disney. So it's not just like a Disney. Sometimes it can feel like a Disney propaganda piece because they obviously pick people that like really enjoy everything. But it's also nice to kind of hear how they ended up where they were and where their passion for that came from. They have a, I can't remember her name, but she was playing Rafiki in the South African version of The Lion King. And so like, and she had never been in a production before, but she's this is her first major production. So it's just kind of neat to kind of learn the stories of these people. And honestly, they show some scenes of her being Rafiki, and you can't tell this was her first production, you know. So it's crazy. They talked to a lot of cool people.
I thought it was really neat too, because they also went behind the scenes and were talking with one of the veterinarians over in Walt Disney World. And so just to kind of like take a step back and think that all the animals that you see on mostly Kilimanjaro safaris, you know, that they have, you know, you don't, they don't just that, I don't know, you see them for 5 minutes.
Sure.
And the fact that, you know, well, they're living their life there. And so like, there's a whole huge team, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
This big, big team, big facility, just completely dedicated to the animals.
And at the Animal Kingdom,
and I think very supportive of it, and they're like, they're all very passionate people. And just the fact that this woman's talking about doing an exam on a, what was it?
Rhinoceros.
Like a rhino, and then she goes to a
porcupine.
A porcupine kind of thing. But then she also goes to a stingray. Like, just the fact that this one person has all of this knowledge of all of how these, I mean, I'm sure it's all kind of somewhat similar, kind of a little related, but not really at all.
No.
You know, like it was just fascinating.
Now, so this is the question I've been pondering. Is there going to be more episodes of this, or was it just one episode?
I was thinking that this was a series and that they were going to do multiple episodes. I'm not thinking that anymore. I think it was just the one thing. I think it was just the one episode, which I really want it to be a series. I think they could do a lot with it, because they could talk to, say, like a Disney photo pass photographer, or I don't know, just all sorts of, there's so many different things that you can do for the Walt Disney Company.
While we're on the topic of Disney Plus shows, how do you feel about this week? The last episode of The Imagineering Story is this Friday.
I'm not talking about it.
What did you think of the last episode?
I've really enjoyed each and every episode for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the first one was really, really cool because it was all about Disneyland. But this one was just interesting because it kind of touched on things that were more emotional. Mm-hmm. The end was kind of the more emotional side of Imagineering. Not just things that have happened at the park, but just how emotionally involved the Imagineers were.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really magical part of that episode. Mm-hmm. You know, it's cool to see like behind the scenes and to be walking through like the Ratatouille ride before they started it.
Right.
And, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But then to kind of hear Kim Irvine say that she spends quite a bit of time in the park just watching the guests enjoy what she does. And I just thought that was so, so cool.
Can you imagine having a job like that, where like you spend years, literally years of your life creating something? And they kind of talked about this too, that like, you don't know how people are going to react until they see it, and they might hate it. And so like, you could spend years on something and it's not received as well as you had hoped.
Right.
Or Rise of Resistance, we talked about earlier, you could have something you did an amazing job on, and people like, can you imagine just how relieved you would feel, and how like sense of pride and accomplishment that like, and one of the things they did at the end that was kind of sad was like, they talked about the earthquake in Tokyo and how like, I keep coming back to this. The Imagineer that was talking about it said that, you know, like when 9/11 happened, you know, the president after a certain amount of time came out and said like, okay, it's time for things to get back to normal, or like we need to get back on our feet and like move on. And they said over in Japan, like they just don't do that. Nobody does that. So they kept the park closed for a month, month and a half. And they were like, well, we have to open it. And people were so happy to just get back to something normal in their life. And the fact that they said that like the entire park was built to withstand this kind of earthquake, and that like the parking lot had some cracks, and like nobody died, nobody was injured at the park, which was wonderful. So, you know, it's kind of amazing to think that, like, you know, that you are creating happiness and you are impacting these people's lives in a way that, like, maybe when you're thinking about, you know, building a ride or an attraction, you're not thinking necessarily that this is going to be so impactful. Some people, you might make someone's favorite attraction that, like, really touches them in some way that you can't even fathom. The other part of the show that I remember really liking was, I didn't appreciate Bob Iger enough, I think. And the beginning of this episode made me appreciate him a little bit more, because he looked at stuff that at the end of Eisner's era had gotten shy about spending money or doing things because of Disneyland Paris. And the fact that Iger came in was like, we need to fix this.
Yeah.
And like having the courage, even in the economic downturn, that was the big thing with California Adventure, was we had the recession in 2009, 2010. Well, 2010, they're talking about Cars Land and building, spending billions of dollars to do all this stuff. And Iger was like, we got to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to improve this. This is not what people come to expect from Disney. And so, you know, we give a lot of crap on this show, and people online give a lot of crap to sometimes things, especially California Adventure, with like off the shelf things or whatever. And I like the fact that Bob Iger is realizing, you know, that like you need to spend some money and you need to improve it. And it needs to be that level of quality. And you kind of get an idea of the legacy that he realizes that there is an important legacy from Walt that is still within the company. And so sometimes I don't realize, like, I don't think of him that much as that. I think that he's more of kind of like the business person. But the fact that like he did champion some of the stuff kind of made me rethink about him and appreciate him more.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, because he said that there were kind of three things that he wanted to focus on, or that he wanted to kind of do, be, whatever. And one of them was building up
China
with the foreign
stuff,
parks. Yeah. Basically, it wasn't worrying about money.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, let them be creative and like bring, let them have their ideas and like make it happen, basically.
Yeah. It was very cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I learned something. I didn't realize that there was almost a complete break of Disney and Pixar. I didn't know that relationship was almost completely gone. It's hard to think of one without the other now in this case, you know, in this time and day. So,
well,
it's interesting.
It's also interesting that like Disney Animation had been basically disbanded, and Bob Iger kind of brought that back, because I forgot until we were watching it recently, Moana is a Disney Animation movie. It's not a Pixar movie.
Yeah.
And it's hard because they're all computer animated. It's hard sometimes to be like, was that Pixar?
Well,
was that Disney?
And since they're very, you know, since they're partners, then it's kind of hard to, because like Toy Story, I always thought of Toy Story as a Disney movie, but it's really Disney Pixar, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just, they're kind of just, they've just kind of meshed together now.
Sure. Wetzel's Pretzels in Downtown Disney is offering one of the best deals around the resort this holiday season. You can purchase a light up holiday mug and get refills for just $1. The mug with initial beverage is $12.99 and available only at the Downtown Disney Wetzel's Pretzels location.
So I think this is a super great deal. My only gripe about this, I don't know why this is supposed, like specifically a holiday mug, because it doesn't look holiday.
No, it looks like a rainbow with a pretzel on it.
Yeah, it just looks like a mug, you know, like a mug kind of like Stein looking, or kind of like mason jar looking, with a handle on the side. And yeah, it looks like, you know, multicolor lights. And yeah, there's just a pretzel printed on the side. It's not really like, there's not garland or stocking or snow even. So I'm not sure why they're calling it the like a holiday mug, but I do think it's great. I'm one that likes a deal. So if you're at the parks and in Downtown Disney frequently, this isn't a too bad of a deal. Because what is a soda in Disneyland? It's like, what, $4 or $5 just for a fountain soda?
You know,
so
one of the stories we reported on last week, they were following up on in some articles I was reading this week about the Galaxy's Edge soda carts, like the themed droid ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you realize that, like, a Coke at one of those things is, like, six something? Because it's a little thermal detonator one?
Aren't you so happy that you got one? You won one when we were at D23.
I would not have paid $6 for one.
I know. Now you have one.
The water is still $4.50, and that's really outrageous. But anyway, my question is, how long are the refills? How long can you get the dollar refills for? That's the question.
Yeah, so we did get this news from the Disney food blogs. So yeah, and it didn't have an end date as to how long you could get this good deal for. I do think it's fun that it kind of, I don't know if this was on purpose or not, but it kind of goes in with the Let It Glow themes.
Sure.
Themed trees and theme around Downtown Disney. So
I still think that stuff looks pretty cool.
I would love to see it in person.
Sure.
Well, two four-legged cast members retired this week. Brother and Reggie, two horses that worked on Main Street pulling the horse-drawn carriage for the last 11 years, retired to the home of a cast member. Both horses are 18 years old.
I love the fact that there was a cast member who obviously has some type of property or something, the facilities to take care of a horse, basically, and was able to do that because, I mean, you know, kind of keep it in the family. It's, you know, it's not getting sold off or doing something else with somebody. So the average lifespan of a horse is like 25 to 30 years. So if they're 18, they've got a few years left in them. Mm-hmm. So I hope they enjoy their retirement.
I think it's so cool. It looks like they even had like a little retirement party for them. Mickey was there to send them off. Both beautiful horses. Both look like they're all white. Very pretty horses.
I can't remember if we, maybe, I think Brother pulled one of the carriages when we were there.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And I do think I remember Reggie from things, just the name. Mm-hmm. I feel like I remember that. Look at, they've got in this photo that was on Twitter. It looks like they have these cute little, I don't know, like Christmas bows in hair.
Yeah. That is
but
cute.
Very cute. I do think that it's very nice that they had kind of a little retirement ceremony for them.
I mean, they're cast members too. That's why they have name tags. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So pretty cool.
Now we take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James tries to stump us with Disney trivia. He's going to read us some questions. We're going to try and answer them. And then James will give us the correct answers after our discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, James?
Well, let's start off with our first of four listener questions.
Ooh.
I mean, I'm kind of cheating because one of them is like a two-parter that goes together, but we'll go with it. So first one comes from Thompson H., who asks, which attractions in Fantasyland have a fast pass?
Well, the Matterhorn.
And Small World.
Small World, yep.
I think that's it.
Hold on.
If only faces could be broadcast. This is hardcore thinking on Tag's face right now.
My final answer is Small World and Matterhorn.
Fantasyland? I concur.
Still Fantasyland, yes.
Fantasyland? I concur.
All right, our second question comes from Ryan H., who asks you to name the six rides at Disneyland that have a bell or a whistle.
Well, the Disneyland Railroad.
A bell or a whistle?
Mm-hmm. The Mark Twain.
Interesting question.
In Disneyland or California Adventure as well?
Just in Disneyland.
So the Disneyland Railroad, the Mark Twain.
Casey Jr., Circus Train.
Casey Jr. The Columbia has a bell.
Mm-hmm. Let's try going around the park. Maybe that'll be a little bit easier.
As we venture in past Main Street, we take a left into Adventureland.
do the things on Main Street count? Like the horseless carriage?
No, not counting those.
Oh, because that has a bell too.
Not counting those.
Okay, not counting those. Feel like there is a whistle in Roger Rabbit's. Is there a whistle in Roger Rabbit's tune? Like,
I don't think so. I think there's a bell up in Tarzan's treehouse, though, that you can ring.
How many do we have?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Is that Railroad? Counting Roger Rabbit or not counting Roger Rabbit?
Railroad, Mark Twain, Casey Jr., Columbia, Tarzan's. Do you want to put Roger Rabbit?
I'm going to put Roger Rabbit down.
Roger Rabbit, cartoon spin. Okay.
Or maybe it's in Mickey. Did you say attractions or rides?
I did say rides.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Do you count Tarzan's treehouse as a ride? I feel like you have to.
The Jungle Cruise, they don't have bells on there.
Jungle Cruise does not.
Yeah, they don't have bells like anywhere.
There's nothing in the Haunted Mansion.
There's
nothing that I can think of in Splash Mountain. Are you counting Galaxy's Edge too? I don't think there's anything in Galaxy's Edge.
I will count Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, there is something in Galaxy's Edge? Oh.
You should have left.
Well, there's only one attraction there.
You would have been racking your brain in the queue, like, oh god.
Is there a whistle in the Millennium Falcon?
Is there?
Does the monorail's horn count as a bell? Or
I am not counting the monorail.
Okay. Because that bop.
It's too ambiguous.
A bell or a whistle? Are there bells in Small World?
I don't feel like you hear them. Like, I feel like there's like they're in there. Do you have to hear them?
I'm gonna go with yes.
Okay, because I don't think you hear them. Okay. We're missing. You said six.
There are six. I mean, you have six answers. Tag just doesn't like Roger Rabbit.
There's an animated bell or an animated whistle somewhere in one of the dark rides. It's either, I thought it was Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin.
I feel like maybe.
Is there anything in Haunted Mansion and Madame Leota's?
What are the things that are hanging? Haunted Mansion Holiday by ringing a bell, Haunted Mansion. Ding a ding a ding a ding.
Overlays.
No, it's not the holiday. It's the regular version. She goes, send us a message by ringing a bell.
Yeah,
so
you're
Haunted
right.
Mansion.
You're right.
Question number three. Now that you've made a list of six rides that have a bell or whistle, pair them with the actual sound clip.
What?
Who is this?
Ryan H.
Ryan H.
Oh, man.
Oh, this will be good because then we'll know if we're right with the. That's the Mark Twain. Mm-hmm. So number one is the Mark Twain.
That's the train.
Disneyland Railroad.
That's Casey Jr.
That's the train. That's the train.
Is that the Columbia?
This sounds like the different engines of the Disneyland Railroad.
It's a trap the whole time, right?
I will go with Casey Jr. on that one.
Was that five? That's Casey Jr.
Wait a minute.
That was Casey Jr. Because that goes, all aboard, let's go. That's Casey Jr.
Yeah, that is.
What number was that?
That is six. You ready to hear it again?
Yeah.
Okay.
Big Thunder Mountain Railroad.
Oh my gosh. How do we miss that one? Okay. We've made up bells now.
Exactly.
Railroad. Are you sure this one is the Disneyland Railroad?
You can even hear the
announcement
in the background.
What is the, isn't there a ride that you're going away from the train?
That's Toad.
Toad. That's it.
Because you're going towards the thing and it's jung, 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 and then it kills you.
Yeah, that's it. I'm like, there's a ride.
Okay, question four, James. This is...
Good luck editing all this.
All right, and your last question comes from Dylan H., and we're riding these audio questions well. Ooh. Though this attraction is extinct in the resort, what attraction could you hear this music in as you exit the attraction?
I know this music.
I do too.
It's something in Tomorrowland.
Yep.
Would you like me to play it again?
No, I'd like. Do you have a hint?
The attraction is extinct.
It's not the 20,000 leads under this. It's not the subs, is it?
I don't think it's the people mover. No, I want to say it was one of those attractions like Adventure Through Inner Space or like. Wouldn't be Rocket to the Moon.
Can we have a hint? Would it be something either of us may have ridden? It's Tomorrowland. This could have been like extinct after the first year.
It's something in Tomorrowland. I think we just have to guess.
I'm going to go with Inner Space.
Okay. I'm going to go with...
You both likely had a chance to ride this.
I think... You know what I think it is?
We had a chance to ride it.
Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Oh! I totally forgot that was...
Yeah, because it sounds like the... Because I think they had like the Imagination Institute's like little music or something.
Sure.
Okay. Well.
Well, that one we would have been able to
maybe
have been on.
Well, thank you, Thompson H, Ryan H, and Dylan H. Wow, all H's this week for sending the trivia in. Stay tuned for the correct answers after our discussion
topic.
Crazy
good questions, too. Thanks, guys.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are continuing our interview from last week with Bob L., who worked at the Disneyland Resort for 3 different times. So this will cover his second and third time working at the resort and finish our listener questions that we always have. So please enjoy the last bit of our interview with Bob. One of my dreams has always been, if I worked at the parks, is I'd want to be a ride operator. And it sounds to me like you were a ride operator at Disneyland, in at least in your first go around.
For all of them.
Oh, well, then there you go. Yeah. So as a ride operator, what's two questions, kind of. What is the worst thing about being a ride operator, and what is the best thing about being a ride operator?
I think the best thing, it was the guest interaction. You know, you spent a lot of time as you're checking seatbelts and whatnot, interacting with the guests when everything was going right. Because, you know, if everything, all of the vehicles were evenly spaced, you know, so you'll get a little bit of time with each guest. So I really enjoyed the guest interactions and making, you know, doing my little piece to make magic for the families that were there. The worst thing was, you know, when, like we discussed, when you were on something that was time critical, either, you know, you're trying to make sure it doesn't shut down, because that's all, you know, not only is that bad for the guests, just as far as their experience, but it's a lot of work to get the ride started back up. Yeah. So we're always fighting against the time clock on that. On busy days, you know, when you had the maximum number of cars out or boats out or whatever, you know, you were hustling. And so the nice thing was that your time went by fast because sure. You were busy and not thinking about, oh, what time is it till I get my next break. Probably the same as any other job. You know, when you're busy, the time goes by fast. And
yeah.
It's not,
yeah.
I like those days.
Yeah, definitely.
I think everyone does. Well, it's hard to believe, but we've only actually talked about your first time working as a Disneyland cast member. So when did you go back for your second time or your second stint?
Well, before that.
Oh, wait, sorry.
Why did you leave the first time? And when did you leave?
I was only there about 6 months.
Okay.
And
you did a ton in 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. And meanwhile, I was working 12-hour shifts, 4 days on, 4 days off, at my primary job. So it was very crazy. Like I said, and the reason that I ended up quitting, it was midsummer, you know, when of course things are at their busiest and they don't want anybody to quit.
Yeah.
But I was, I think Disneyland, you know, it was before California Adventure, the park closed at 1 a.m.
Oh, I miss those days.
And then you had to, you know, cycle out the attractions and get them all shut down, mm-hmm. walk the tracks or depending on where you're at before you got off shift and then go to costuming. Back then, cast members could not take costumes home like they can now.
Yeah.
And so you had to go and change out of your costume, turn that into costuming. And then, you know, then you leave the park. And the nice thing was the cast member parking lot was literally right outside the gates there, are right off of Harbor.
Nice.
And so it wasn't far to walk to your car. And then I had a 45 minute. I was on my way home and fell asleep on the 5 freeway. And I woke up in the next lane over and it scared the living daylights out of me and decided as much fun as I was having, it was not worth dying over.
Yeah.
And wow, so I agree with that.
Yeah. So, so I put in my notice and quit after that. But I made sure to put in notice and leave under good terms so that I could come back later.
And when did you come back?
So I came back again in December of 2000. They were ramping up to open California Adventure.
What an interesting time to be at the parks. I like this.
Yeah. I was born in 64. So I was there for opening day of Disneyland. And I wanted to take part in that part of that history of opening a park. And so I found out that they were doing a big, you know, hiring push. And so I went and applied again and got hired. And they didn't move us over to California Adventure until I think right around the 1st of January. to start over there. I actually was hired in to work at Hyperion Theater. And so I spent the month of December doing guest control in Disneyland for Fantasmic and Christmas Parade.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
So that was, it was fun. It was probably some of the, you know, the best days and worst days. A lot of guest interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of really upset guests because right. they want to go left, but you have to make them right. And so some of that was trying on your nerves.
I can imagine.
And, yeah.
I can imagine.
But then they finally were ready to train us on Hyperion. And that was an absolute blast.
I was going to say that, that's an overlooked place, I feel, as far as, you know, if you would want to be a cast member, where would you want to go? That's not one that usually comes to the top of my mind, but I think that would be a really cool place. Yeah, I think that'd be a really great place to work as a cast member.
It was a lot of fun. It you didn't have to have opening shifts because they don't have a show that early.
Yeah.
You didn't have to have closing shifts because the shows don't run that late. So you kind of had the best of both worlds there, just the daytime.
Yeah.
You either were assigned on that particular inside or outside.
Okay.
The cast members outside were greeting people as you come mm-hmm. through those little facade doors.
Yeah.
And then the different rows, depending on which level you're going to be going in and basically just kind of doing guest control. So if you worked the inside, then it was kind of an usher position. So you'd be assigned to a certain area. Those days were a lot of fun because, you know, say there was either three or four shows that day, you know, 20 minutes, half hour, the show was scheduled to begin. They'd open the doors and you'd bring people in and then you'd do the show. You got to watch the show.
Yeah.
And then they would leave and then you might have 2 hours to kill before the next show.
Wow.
What so did you do for those 2 hours?
A lot of times we just sat in the theater and chit-chatted.
Waited. Like, they probably did cleanup stuff.
You know, I don't remember how many cast members. There might have been 20 of us or 30 of us, whatever it was for the inside. And we'd all just hang out and talk. And then they'd say, okay, go to lunch. And you go 30-minute lunch together and come back and get ready to load the next show.
I know a lot of people like the idea of something like that, but I like to be busy. And like 2 hours of just sitting around talking would drive me crazy.
Because we had a tight crew that had a lot of fun together, the time went by fast. But yeah, if you weren't making friends and just truly having a hangout with, you know, other people that loved being there as much as you did,
yeah,
then I could see where that would be a real drag. My wife wanted to be part of opening the park as well, and she, up until that point, she was a stay at home, and she hired into custodial. She was not happy when she found out that I was sitting in between shows in a nice theater and she was running from restroom to restroom clean toilet stalls.
You know, I will say though, from talking with Lynn and Ken over at the Sweep Spot, I mean, custodial could be pretty cool. I mean, I know it's like cleaning toilets, but like you get a lot of freedom to kind of move around and do stuff. So, I mean, there's that, I guess.
Yeah. The people out sweeping definitely have that. Because they've got a certain area that they're in charge of keeping clean,
sure.
And they, you know, interact a lot with the guests and pass out maps and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think I can see where that would be a lot of fun. Obviously, the days that are raining, not as much fun.
sure.
Because you're literally in the elements until you go on break. When you're cleaning the restrooms, however, you might have, I don't know how many restrooms she had, 6, 10 restrooms, whatever they're. And you literally, like, you were expected to be in each one, like, every 20 minutes or something.
Dang.
Yeah, so you had to be quick. And, of course, they had, you know, processes and the right tools to clean and stuff. But, yeah, it was you know, there wasn't as much freedom on that as there was out sweeping. However, they did get a bonus, you know, an incremental raise when they got trained to do this. And that's why she did it. She just wanted to make more money.
Sure. So what, remind me, was the first show at the Hyperion, was that the Blast show?
No, it was called Steps in Time.
Steps in Time, that's right.
Yeah, and that actually was two versions of that show. The first show, the way I explained it to people, it was like when you go to the Academy Awards and there's a number that's been nominated for an Academy Award from some movie, and then they put on this production of that song.
Okay.
And so it literally was, you know, starting like with Snow White, it was music from Disney through time.
Oh, neat.
But there was no real story tying them together.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so once we had been running for a little while, I remember Michael Eisner came through to see the show, and he was not happy. And I don't remember how much money he threw back into the budget, but they literally shut down for like 3 weeks or 6 weeks. I can't remember what, but they shut down for a few weeks, revamped the show. They used the same years, but they hired actors to fill scenes in between the songs.
Okay.
And had a storyline that went throughout for the show. So then for the people that were confused by all these songs without a story, then it made more sense. And I actually liked both versions of the show.
Wow.
So I did get to work with Eden Espinoza. She played the fairy godmother show. Actors mm-hmm. played the fairy godmother. And she went on to Broadway and played in Wicked and Rent. And
wow.
She was Idina Menzel's understudy for those, and then took roles for her. So she was really good. I still like follow her.
So when Eisner came, did you actually get a chance to meet Eisner?
I never met Eisner. I was made aware that he was there. And sure. I think what they did is they closed the balcony and him and whoever was in his little entourage that was there. Then they had the whole balcony to themselves.
Gotcha.
And I was, and we did have cast members up there, but I wasn't one of them.
Sure.
So after you did some time and experienced the theater life, were there any other attractions over in California Adventure that you got to work on?
Yeah. Once we got that up and running and fully trained on that, then they trained me on the animation building, that little blue wow. building you walk past as you
yes.
go.
Yes.
That was a lot of fun. That was when they had one of the original shows they had in there. There was a show in there that had Walter Cronkite in it. I can't remember who else was in the show. It was a video. Mm-hmm. It's where Turtle Talk is with Crush.
Okay.
Was in that same room. And so one of the things we did, obviously, was at the turnstiles as people came in, you know, head counting before reloading the theater and stuff, and then also go alternating inside the studio to do the little spiel before the movie started.
Okay.
And then, mm-hmm. and then be in there in case somebody, you know, needed something, had an emergency. Sure. And then we also had the Drawn Nation show on the other side where people mm-hmm. would go in and learn how to draw a character. They didn't have us teaching the drawing, which is really good because I'm not really good at drawing anything. I'm good at stick figures, and that's it. But we were like introducing the show, being in there, you know, guests needed to exit.
Sure, sure. Made sure they had their pens and pencil, or their pencils and papers and
right,
all that right. fun stuff.
Yeah, and then there's you've been through, there's several positions as you go into Ariel Prado and the Beast Library and stuff like that, mm-hmm. where there's just cast members in all those spots to interact with the guests and help out. So I did all of those positions in there.
Very fun.
And then in addition to the animation building, I also did Superstar Limo, which is now where Mike and Sully is.
Yes.
Man, that when I watched the Imagineering story this week, they yeah. kind of talked about that attraction, and they mm-hmm. were, you know, because there was the whole thing that it was supposed to be paparazzi, but then like Princess Di passed away when they were developing it, and they were like, well, the paparazzi are kind of bad now, so we got to try to change it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then it just wasn't that, people didn't really get it or find it that exciting. And I tell you, even now with Mike and Sully, it's the same like ride layout and stuff. They just kind of rethemed it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But, I do like the Monsters, Inc. attraction. I never got to experience the Superstar Limo, although I did see some videos of it and I thought, this is stupid.
What was your take on it, since you knew it pretty well?
I enjoyed it, you know, the first or second time riding through it, just to see yeah. all the different caricatures of the stars.
Oh yeah,
you know?
That's right. Yeah,
because
yeah.
they'd have Drew Carey and Cher and these different, but they were 3D, but they were still done like those caricatures that you have drawn where it's like your face and a little body, that kind of thing. It was really interesting, but you know, there were so few rides in the park or things for the little kids to do when it first opened, and that was one of them. Mm-hmm. And the kids didn't get it. It wasn't like it was the cartoon characters. It was the adults recognized who Cher was, but the 5-year-old didn't know who Cher was.
Right. Sure.
So
that makes sense.
So they, you could see that they were kind of disappointed. I mean, you know, if they were really young, just the bright lights and the music and stuff, you know, would get kids' attention. But it wasn't as if, like with Mike and Sully, that it was characters recognized.
True. Very true.
So that's all of the attractions that time.
And when did you leave that time?
So I was there for 7, and basically I ended up leaving because my schedule was changing at my real job at JPL.
Sure. Yep.
And it just was going to be too hard to compete with it. So I ended up having to drop it. It was a lot of fun, but since it wasn't feeding the family,
right,
I had to let it go. Yeah.
And when did you leave again? That part cut out. Sorry.
Oh, so I've been there about 7 months, right around the start of summer when things got busy.
You know, I'm sensing a trend here.
Well, it was California Adventure, so even that first summer really busy.
That's true.
That's true. And sadly, like the week after I had put in my notice, one of my leads came up to talk to me about my quote unquote future.
Yeah.
And he had just submitted me as a recommendation to become a trainer.
No. Mm. Oh.
And I was like, oh man, I just put in my notice. So yeah.
It's all about timing, right?
Yeah. That would have been a lot of fun. But again, working the two jobs, it's very tiring and stuff like that. So when it wasn't gonna work out, I had to let it go.
Did you get to partake in how did you get to be a part of the opening of the park? You know, you're on the crew, but was there any sort of special, I don't know, like ceremonies or anything kind of extra that you got to be a part of?
There wasn't any ceremonies or anything, but I was physically there working the attraction on the day on the grand opening. You know, I'd been there for a lot of the preview days and things like that. And I don't think I was there when they had the big media push.
Yeah.
You know, when they have a lot of not only the media there, but a lot of stars coming in and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's closed. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there to see any of those folks. But I was there on the opening day, which was my goal, was to be part of the opening. I have to say, opening the new park and being on that opening crew, there were a lot of extra perks. We got a lot of extra tickets because they needed people in the park for everybody to practice. So they gave us loads of tickets to have friends and family come in.
Well, that's fun.
That was fun. There was a lot of opening crew merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
I still have in one vacuum seal bags. My wife and I were just talking about this the other day. I've got an opening crew bomber jacket that has patches from all of the different lands in California Adventure on it. It says opening team.
Oh, neat.
Well, that was really worth something now because a lot of that doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
Right. I haven't gone to look and see what it's worth. I don't think I'll sell it anyhow.
Yeah.
By the time I got to purchase mine, they didn't have one in my size. So instead of a 2X that I could wear, I've got an extra large, which is really tight. But I wasn't planning on wearing it and getting it dirty anyhow, so it didn't really matter.
Sure. Yeah, I didn't want to follow the motorboat cruise with that one on.
Yeah.
Exactly.
When was the next time that you worked? The third and, I guess, at this point, final time?
Yeah, my last time I hired in February of 2013. Again, it was just, I'm looking to pick up some extra money. I'm going to go where I have a good time. And I hired into attractions again in this time. They put me in California Adventure and I was in a seaside attraction. So it was basically, I could have been eligible for anything over on a boardwalk, any of those rides. What I ended up doing to start was jumping jellyfish and the Golden Zephyr. And so I worked both of those attractions for about 6 months. Sometime after 6 months, then I was eligible to request training to an additional attraction. And you get to put in, you know, your favorites, or you put in like 3 that you'd like to work or something like that. No guarantees that those are the ones you're going to learn, but they tried to do that. One of the ones that I put in was Grizzly, And so I trained on Grizzly and that as well. And that was a lot of fun.
Now, I will tell you, the first two attractions you got trained on, I can imagine why they'd put new people on there, because it's like who wants to work these attractions? Because the Golden Zephyr is very kind of boring as an attraction. I do like the jumping jellyfish. There is something in me that is afraid of heights. So I love the jumping jellyfish, because like it's high, but it's not too fast. It's not too crazy. Like it's and as an adult, you know, typical Disney, you can go on it as an adult. So
right. It wasn't the Malibu.
Right. So did you have a lot of adults go on to the jumping jellyfish?
Yeah, we did. We did. And of course, there'd be some children that had to have an adult with them.
Sure.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, just a lot of, and I do ride it when we're at the park. Usually it doesn't have a very long line, so you can do it quickly.
Right.
But yeah, I enjoy it as well. And I have a problem with heights, kind of like, you know, pushing that boundary a little bit.
Sure.
But in a safe manner.
Yeah, I actually really enjoy that attraction. And then Grizzly River Run,
fun.
I feel like that has a ton of cast members working it, because I feel it like has. There's a bunch out on that rotating platform loading and unloading people. And I feel like there's somebody probably in a control booth somewhere, or multiple people in a control booth.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, the people that run like the fast pass entry and stuff, those are also cast members for that attraction?
Yes. Yeah. And it depended. Part of the time they were using the fast passes World of Color. And so a lot of time they would have World of Color guest control over there.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't have to have somebody from Grizzly in that area. But if they weren't staffing over, usually have somebody over there. And then you have a greeter person at the entrance. You have a person on fast pass entrance. And then sometimes, if we were really busy, you'd also have somebody, which is where FastPass and the normal line come together.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So I know you've talked before about how they would filter in, you know, 20-1 or whatever the ratio was that they're trying to do. So when the park was really busy, you'd have somebody at the FastPass entrance taking the paper tickets back then.
Yep.
Now they're monitoring the electronic device. And then you would have a separate person actually merging the two lines together as they came in. And then there's a couple of positions up watching people come through the ride.
That would be a fun one, I think.
Yeah. Well, because it's just seatbelts, right? Because like anybody at any time could probably take a seatbelt off and stand
exactly.
up and be an idiot.
Exactly. And we had people not only do that, we had people usually, or the positions you were at was at the top of the drops.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
If you saw somebody trying to stand up or whatever, you could stop the gates from the drop so it wouldn't allow anybody down.
Mm.
That way you could yell at them on the microphone and get them to put their seatbelt back on.
Sure.
If they didn't, or if they were a real idiot and decided to climb out of the raft, which does happen, then you'd have to hit the emergency stop. When you hit the emergency stop, everything stops moving.
Mm-hmm.
Spiels start running. People start panicking. And the water goes away.
the whole thing empties?
It empties down into down on the Paradise Pier, the wharf area.
Yeah.
And all that water goes down there.
Yeah. The whole thing empties out. Wow.
Yeah. And you can't start loading people to get them out until that goes away.
Right.
And those rafts are sitting on the bottom. And then maintenance has to come out. And we weren't allowed to actually get them out. Maintenance would get them out, and then we would walk them to their exit.
Oh, jeez. My gosh.
Well, then it probably took time to pump the water back into the attraction to get it going.
Exactly, yeah.
What
the attraction
process.
Would be down for 40 minutes to an hour, you know, just getting it cycled out and back up again.
I remember back, they didn't the last time I was there, but the last two times ago when I was there, I believe, at Disneyland in Splash Mountain, there used to be a guy that would sit at the bottom of the lift hill for Splash. And he was always just like, the cast member was always just like, you know, tilted back in the seat, feet up, like, because I think they had a problem with people like getting out of the boats right there. So it was like, and then of course we had that video that happened, what was that, 6, 8, 10 months ago, something like that, where the person on
Big Thunder
like got out of the train because he dropped his phone or some stupid thing.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah. Right.
It's just amazing. Like, You really value your phone more than your life, like to get out. Like, you could die. That's why there are safety apparatus to like hold you in. Like,
yeah,
just wait till the end. Cast members can help you.
Right. And in all attractions, you guys have discussed this before, they've got cameras throughout. And so a lot of times, you know, that person that was kicking back probably had a bunch of cameras that they were looking at.
Oh, sure.
And so they might not have been asleep, but just looking at those cameras. I know on Grizzly, once the sun went down, you could only see the rafts that were right there at the drop. Like you couldn't see more than like three rafts away because the lighting is also dim in there. And so, but they had cameras that had like night vision. So you'd be in that room and it didn't make any sense. The window, we're just in that room watching those cameras. Sure. And for the same thing, you're watching for people that are being stupid.
How scary.
How, just out of curiosity, in a typical day, how many stupid people were on the attraction?
You would definitely stop those drops multiple times in a day.
Really?
Yeah, 10-15 times a day where you would have to stop to be able to have somebody sit down, put your seatbelt back on, whatever. And sometimes it was like where the lift is that takes you up the, you know, once you've come out that wheel and you kind of slowly drift around in that lift, there isn't a cast member usually there. There are a bunch of cameras. And right when they stop or they start going up that lift, people would try to change seats. You'd be watching them on cameras from the control room, and you'd see people switching seats, taking their seat belts off, et cetera. And so the same thing, you'd have to stop that advance and get on the loudspeaker. And if necessary, employ a cast member to talk to them, get them to sit down.
My question is, why wouldn't you just sit in the seat you wanted to begin with?
Well, right? Think about how it's you a load circle. That vehicle. It's kind of hard to, if you go in single file, you can't really shift around once you're in there.
I don't know. It's still silly.
I feel like that's one of those ones that once you get to where you're just, that's your
where
seat.
You're at.
Yeah. Well, I know you guys have just, you know, mentioned this, but it just seems like, you know, I'm at Disneyland, everything's safe, and people check their brains at the main gate when they come in.
Yeah.
Yep, and they're just not thinking that, you know, here's this, you know, 1,000-pound thing floating through.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get, it's not so much that you'll get hurt getting dumped out of it because you're going to land in the water, but the next one's going to hit you.
Yeah.
And, you know, or your foot's going to, you know, the accidents that they've had, definitely, I don't know if anything's happened to Grizzly, but the accidents they've had on the Rivers of America, which you guys have probably read about on where somebody got their, you know, was there in the water, supposed to be, got their foot stuck in the track.
Ow.
Yeah.
And died. So people don't think about that stuff.
No.
Did you ever get to work the rotating loading platform and unloading platform? And if so,
yes,
I've always wondered this.
Uh-huh.
How dizzy do you get as a cast member just kind of continuously going on that thing all day? How off balance do you get? Because I always feel a little after I walk off of it, I always kind of feel like I have to get my footing under me again. And I was only on it for like maybe a minute.
Yeah, when you're on it for a period of time, you know, it's kind of like getting sea legs, like being on a boat.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, you get used to it. It doesn't, and you actually feel it when you come while you're on it. You don't have any issues.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, and you get a lot more your steps in for that day.
Yeah, well,
exactly.
That.
Yeah, I never had a Fitbit back then. I wish I did. Would have been interesting to know how many steps.
It's when you get off of it and you're on like solid ground again, then it's kind of like, ugh.
Yeah.
Your body has to catch up with your.
Yeah.
So the last thing I want to talk to you about, since we've been talking for quite a while now, is you've also worked guest control for parades and shows. So kind of talk a little bit about that. Like what parades and shows did you work control for, and kind of just kind of some of your experience with that.
Okay. So basically they will have certain cast members assigned to guest show operations. So they just do guest control shows and parades all the time. And I think you talked about this on a previous episode, though. They will also borrow people from the local attractions. Attractions traditionally have less people in them, less guests in line and on attractions. Some of the attractions shut down completely. And so they've got a lot of cast members that would be standing around doing nothing, you know.
Sure.
And so they can loan them out for a parade or for a show. So so I did guest control on the Main Street Electrical Parade back when before it went glowing away. in the 90s.
First time.
So yeah, the first time. and I do have one of those. I was one of those people who sent in my money. And
how do you feel about that now?
I have mixed emotions about it. I do enjoy it. I enjoy the nostalgia. But at the same time, then, you know, does that item that I purchased, you know, hoping would have some value someday, does that devalue the item? You know, for me, it doesn't, because it's just, I was part of that experience. Now I have a piece of that, you know, in my collection. So
see, that's what I think
it's,
would be
it's
cool.
Worth the same for me.
Yeah, it was a bulb that was in the attraction or on the parade. And yeah. So like that means something.
Exactly. So that part I don't mind. And I don't mind it coming around once in a while either, because again, that nostalgia factor.
Sure.
So I may have missed this, Bob. Did you get one of these as a kid? Like, was this a gift to you as a cast member, or did you just have to purchase this like guest would?
No, I purchased it like a guest would. They had that big push.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
I still think they're very cool.
They're cool looking.
Yeah.
The display definitely. Case and stuff is pretty neat.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I wish there was a way to connect it up, light up.
Oh, yeah. That'd be cool.
So, and I can't remember. I'm sure there were parades, you know, like the cavalcade or something that was going on at the time that they would have loaned me out to as well. But nothing that stands in my mind like the electrical parade.
Sure.
I remember, you know, being one of those cast members out there with the light up wand, you know, moving it back and forth to the beat of the music.
Fun. That would be
so. So definitely members of that. I had one guest that really wanted to get across the parade route to his family on the other side, not in a cross area. Happened to be where I was at, and he really wanted to step out in front of him really badly to get across there. And he was about 50% of my size and weight. And thought he was going to push through me to do that, physically move me out of the way. It didn't go well.
Yeah, no. Nope.
And, you know,
nope.
He wanted my name. I said, feel free to go down to guest relations and tell them I would let you step this float. And I'm sure they'll be happy to take your
Yeah, they'll be very happy I was doing my job. But
yeah. Right.
But you're not going to do it while I'm here. So
yeah.
That was, you know, that was part of the job. And that's, you know, yes, you're there to help the flow of traffic and stuff like that. But you're also there as safety for the guests and making sure they're not sticking their feet out, because those drivers have a very limited view. You know,
I believe it.
You've got cast members with a lot of big headdresses and things on and lights, which I'm sure impairs their vision because it's right in their face.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, you don't want them getting stepped on like that. So, yeah, that, you know, a lot of that experience that's like ingrained in my head, and the other parades, not so much. I did work a couple of times. That was when the Pocahontas show was going theater over there. So I did get to work that.
So what kind of things did you do when you were working the show?
So it was just, again, kind of like theater. You're an usher for the area that you were in. So you were answering questions. You're helping with guest flow. Maybe someone's trying to find their party, find their seat, case maybe. So you're helping with that. And it's a lot of action. And so that, you know, there, since that's one of the things I enjoyed about the job in general, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was probably where's the bathroom a billion times.
Yeah. And they're usually standing right in front of it.
Yep.
But, you know, people that ask you what time. Too.
They're just themed so well. That's the problem.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Sometimes they want to know what time the 3 o'clock parade starts.
That's one of the jokes, but I feel like the reason that's a joke is because I think it happens.
Yeah.
True. There's actually a shirt with Goofy on it that they had out for a while, and it says, what time is the 3 o'clock
parade? Jeez.
Too fun. Oh, yeah. And then the other thing that you happen. Would work. One of the other shows you had worked too, what you mentioned was Fantasmic. I'm dying to know about working Fantasmic.
Even if it was just
crowd control.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That by far is my favorite show, not only at that park, at any of the parks.
Mm-hmm.
Way better than the Florida parks.
Yes. And we've at least got that.
Yeah, it's nice to have the stadium seating, but other than that, it's a much better show here. And but also, I mean, none of the other venues, you know, outside of Disney can compete with that show. You know, as long as it's been run, nobody's been able to top that show.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, when it was one of those things that when everything was running smoothly, it was just a lot of fun. You got to see the show, listen to the music, a lot of mm-hmm. guest interaction. Unfortunately, sometimes like the fog roll, they can't see the show. You know,
everybody
wants to let you know how much they paid to get in there, and why can't Disney control the fog?
Yeah.
You know? So, so there were you know, bad instances, you know, having to deal with somebody that was not happy, and you know, you did what you could to try to you know, change it for them and make a better experience. But sometimes things are out of your control.
That's what you need to do, Teresa. You need to go up to a cast member and be like, "Where's Murphy? I came here to see Murphy."
I couldn't do that. maybe I'd get lucky and they'd be like, "Oh, here, let me take you to Murphy's lair. You can go down into her cave."
Nope.
That'd be amazing.
That cast member, that'd be the last time they worked there.
Yeah, that
I'm
would
sure.
be amazing. So yeah, go ahead, Bob.
I was going to say, when I was over at California Adventure, I worked World of Color a lot.
Oh, wow.
And I worked guest control for the Mad Tea Party a lot. And those were both a lot of fun. And one of my best experiences over there was having, you know, a guest that was just having a really bad day. It was busy. The lines were long, things like that. And mm-hmm. I got permission from a lead to take the family over to Midway Mania and actually bring them up through the exit and get them a ride without standing in line.
Oh,
and it completely turned around there, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, there was line after line after just like dreading standing in the line. It's a ride they wanted to go on. And as you guys know, that line can get very long.
Yes.
Yep. And, yeah. And just because of overhearing them talk about it and then trying to make a difference for them. And it just completely turned their day around. And
that's what makes Disney magic. That's why people pay extra to go to Disney, mm-hmm. because there's the chance that those kind of magical moments happen. And I feel like every time we've had somebody on that has been a cast member at some point, each one of the people we've had on has had a moment like this.
Yeah. The funny thing is that they never tell you, as a cast member that you can do things like that.
Yeah.
Like you learn it through, you know, from another cast member. The other thing was that, you know, they had the different sections for World of Color, mm-hmm. and the yellow section is always the last to fill up. And a lot of times it doesn't fill up, and then they take the ropes down anyhow. So, you know, if I had a guest that I just really wanted to help and I was working that section, it was really easy to just say, come on in, you know,
right.
I mean, nobody was going to yell at me for doing
it. Yeah.
And so I could do that easily. I could make their day, and completely turn around something that had been negative for them in a very easy way that cost zero.
Yeah, you know? That's awesome.
You know, you talk about the things like placing a popcorn spilt and things like that. And yeah, mm-hmm. they do all of those things, but those cost more money, you know, and Disney does it because it's Disney. But this cost Disney zero for me to walk somebody in the back entrance and get them on the ride. You know, to get them inside the ropes to see a show that they really wanted to see, mm-hmm. couldn't get a fast pass. And so those, I enjoyed doing those kinds of things whenever I possibly could. On the other hand, if I had a guest that was very insistent, they needed to go under that rope. And especially if they waited till my back was turned, I happened to notice they were on the side of that rope.
Oh, yeah.
Then they would get yanked out and they could go have a discussion with security about why they're not supposed to be on that side of the rope. And I had no qualms about somebody that was being a jerk not getting in, you know.
I was like that when I worked in retail. If you came up and you were a nice little old lady for an example, and you were like, I don't know if I can return this, I don't have the receipt anymore. I just, you know, it broke and I really, you know, it's important to me. I would do everything I could to replace that for you.
Right. But
if you came up, if you were Karen with the haircut, that is always the joke for retail people, you came up and started yelling at me that I was going to return this and this was a piece of junk and, you know, or you're going to take your business elsewhere, I'd find some obscure rules to why not to help you on it. Because like, that's not how you get things. So that's
exactly
how I do things. I go and talk to people and I'm just really nice. And I'm like, I don't know if you could do anything, but well, like Teresa, when you went with the ears, And we were at the newsstand,
yes,
and you were like, can I look at that set of ears? And they were better. And you're like, can I exchange these? And the guy was like, sure, boom.
Yeah, I was surprised that working in retail, I was surprised he didn't have to scan it out kind of thing.
No, he probably just took yours and threw it on the shelf.
I'm sure
and
he
you're
did.
Done.
Yep. I have one weird question back on Fantasmic. Go figure. I have more questions about Fantasmic. Was there, so I noticed this last time we were there and I was really surprised, but I'm sure it happens all the time. Was there any times that, you know, the show must go on mentality, right? So last time we were there, when the princesses came out on their floats, poor Belle did not have her beast and she was having to dance the choreography on her own. And it really stuck with me because I've never noticed things not go perfectly planned for that show. And like I said, I'm sure it happens probably all the time, but what, you know, were there things like that that would happen? And what was kind of the most like surprising one maybe that you witnessed or saw when you were working the show?
I don't remember anything like that happening when I was doing the guest control for Fantasmic. Sure. But again, I was only there for a couple of weeks doing that, you know, time.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to say that Disney is really good about doing everything, you know, I mean, they're so well trained to cover like any problem that happens. I think the reason you saw her dancing with the beast is because the music plays, right? So they could at least send her out and have that section of the show.
Right. Yeah.
Still it's intact. Better than sending
better than sending an empty boat.
Yeah, or no boat at all. Mm-hmm. And that's all you have this playing, but there's nothing going on. Now, there may be options that they have for certain things where maybe the mist screens could come up and they could, put it if they have the planning, you know, they know we don't have a Beast and Belle today, or whatever. That would be something that they might be able to have it. Back up. Obviously they chose not to do it if they have it, but I never noticed anything there. And I think that's just because Disney's so good at adjusting based on, and as would any show that has to deal with cast members that might have an issue. I remember with Steps in Time and I was at Hyperion Theater many times when a cast member was not there, was late, twisted an ankle, something like that. And they literally have to, if they didn't have like an understudy to cover the role, like when you talked with Dylan, times they had people that played multiple roles.
Yeah.
If they didn't have that, they'd have to reblock dance numbers because they'd have a different number of people. They'd have to fill in this hole on the stage and stuff. And so sometimes they'd skip like the morning show would be dark. And then it was so they could have that extra time to it and still do the rest of the shows that day, missing, you know, a couple of cast members for the show.
Yeah. Wow.
So when did you leave this last time?
So I was much better. I didn't wait till just a few months into summer. I was actually there 18 months before I finally burned out again. And that was because I had just a lot of other extracurricular stuff as well, but it literally was burnout. 18 months of doing that, at least every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for the entire 18 months, and sometimes more than 3 years. Yeah.
So you work Monday through Friday, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you work at the park. So you really didn't have any downtime, really.
Correct. And then during the summertime and also spring break and Christmas break, you're also required 5 shifts those weeks.
Oh, wow.
So I was working, you know, basically double time. So, so it was a lot.
Not getting double the pay.
Exactly. So pretty much, I think all the money I made during 18 months probably got dumped back into the parks. And when we were going there with family to visit the parks on my days off, into the cast member store, Company D, which is an amazing place, and with discounts up to 80% for cast members. So
sure. You
get all kinds of stuff. So a lot of the extra money into buying my nieces and using kids' stuff at Company D. But at least it was paid for, and I got paid to play and have a good time.
Yes. Yeah. Nice. Very cool. Well, while we're kind of on the topic of like some of the perks that you got, you know, you got that's one of my Disney bucket list things. I know it's stupid, but I really want to go check out the cast member store. I think that'd be just so cool. I'd treat it like a museum. But anyways, what other fun perks did you get for being a cast member?
They gave you basically free tickets. You had a main gate pass that allowed you to sign yourself 3 guests in every 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
So that right there was several hundred dollars worth of perks.
Right.
If you had a large family, then they would increase that to cover like all of immediate family. So if you if you had five kids, it was you and six people. So your spouse, mm-hmm. kids could all.
Nice.
So you didn't have to say, sorry, kids, happy. Yeah, I'm
favorite. You don't get to go to Disneyland today. You get to swing the car.
you didn't do your homework. You have to stay home. So that was a big perk. There was always tickets for special events and things that they would do to bring your friends and family in.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. They a couple times a year would give out a friends and family pass to the cast member store, so you could bring folks in and they could enjoy the discounts inside the cast member store as well. So that was really nice. And then they have throughout the year, several events, or you got discounts in the park when you were there as a guest also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice.
And they were better, you know, a larger discount than the annual pass discounts that you get. Sure. So you could save a little bit more money. But they also had special events that were for cast members and usually a guest or family as well. So one of my bucket list things this last time that I was there, I was able to check off, and that was rowing crew for the canoe races during the summer.
Yes.
And we didn't last long, but we had a great time.
That's what matters, right? Just a great time.
Yeah. It's a, you know, single elimination. So you lose the one time you were done. but there were several practices ahead of time where you were coming in. It was all done before the park opens. So you're coming in while there's maintenance vehicles all over and the sun's just barely coming up and you're out there with your team practicing on the river. That was a lot of fun. Definitely something that was on my bucket list.
That'd be super cool.
Yeah. There's another event they do every year called Minnie's Moonlit Madness.
Oh.
It's like a scavenger hunt through the parks.
Oh. Yeah,
I believe you're bungee corded together with your team of like four people.
Yeah.
And they give you clues and then you have to go, you know, they don't tell you where it is. You have a clue and you got to figure it out and find it. I still have not had a chance to participate in that. That's part of the problem with having to be a second job was usually when that was going on, I was working my primary job.
Sure. Yeah.
Or trying to sleep occasionally. Yeah. So, since you've talked with Dylan on the show, at least for the last several years in a row, they've actually had him be the MC for that show. They do a show like before the race starts afterwards. And he's been the MC for that. Which I haven't got to see, but I've seen video I've seen video clips and he's amazing at that too. But that's on my bucket list. So when I'm a four-peat cast member, then I'll have to make sure I can do that.
Well, speaking of a four-peat cast member, we've got our last question for you. So if you went back your fourth time and you could work anywhere in the parks or even the company, what would you do and why?
I've given a lot of thought. I really enjoy attractions.
Yeah.
And so both the show side of it as well as rides. But one thing that I always thought would be really cool to do to be a Plaid, work at guest relations and do the tours, behind the scenes tours, not only for things that there's a few things that I haven't seen that I want to see, like Walt's office, there's a little apartment above the fire station, but just, you know, all that extra trivia. And then you're also getting that real personalized time with the guests, making something really special and incredible. Probably once of a lifetime for them.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
And I had a couple of friends of mine when I was working there over 18 months the last time that had moved on to working in guest relations. And one of them specifically wanted to do the tours. And she did ultimately get to do those and did the walk and waltz steps or whatever they call
it.
Tour,
yeah,
things like
that.
Tour. And she was amazing at making something special for guests. And she was always posting things about, you know, helping out with somebody's wedding proposal, different types of things like that, that they got to do. And it looked like a lot of fun. I think that's probably where I would like to go. Usually you have to already be working in the park doing something else before you can cross train over.
I could see you doing that, or I could see you retired and driving one of the Main Street vehicles.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun too, but then you got to work running over people.
Yeah, there is.
You know,
it would be really short for me. I just run people over.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
I'm honking if you get in the way.
dealing with LA traffic, you know, is is bad.
And, you don't want to be in a car.
I never had a bad day working at the parks. I had a few really bad days on the freeway getting there.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I would last long in one of those vehicles waiting for stupid people to get out of the way.
Yeah. I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, it has been a pleasure talking to you this evening.
We've learned so much.
We've talked about so many different things. I'm sure that there's quite a bit of information here that our listeners are going to love to kind of learn about that they may not have known about before. So I know I learned some stuff.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Talked about some of the attractions that I either experienced or never got to experience, like the motorboat cruise or the Teresa, like the Skyway. So and to hear just about kind of the history, like the first time with California Adventure.
That's
so
very
it's amazing.
Cool. Yes, very cool.
Well, thanks for having me. I've had a blast, and just in general, thank you for doing what you guys do with this podcast and giving those of us that have this affliction called Disney a place to congregate with folks that have the same affliction.
Yes.
So. There are quite a few of us around, which the internet, I have to give credit to the internet for connecting us all together.
Yep.
Definitely.
Well, if you want a great place to talk about all things Disneyland and Disney in general, then supporting the show and joining the Discord chat is the right choice for you. Supporting the show at the Park Hopper level or above gives you access to the great community, arrange meetups in the park with other fans, share pictures and history from the parks, and more. There's always something cool and interesting happening in there, so why not support the show and join the other weekly tiers? Head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
Well, if you enjoy the show, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. By leaving a review, it helps get our ranking better and allows the community to grow.
Well, now it's time to return to producer James in Trivia Land to get the answer to this week's trivia.
Yeah, and some great stuff this week. A little different than the norm, and I like the audio clues and the two-parter. That was fun.
Oof.
All right, so our first question was, which attractions in Fantasyland have Fast Pass? And Two Minds Together was great. You both got one of them, so it's a win together, you two. Second question came from Ryan H., the first of two from him this week. Name the 6 rides at Disneyland that have a bell or a whistle. On your first pass, you got 4 of them right. Casey Jr., the Disneyland Railroad, the Mark Twain Riverboat, and the sailing ship Columbia. You already know you missed Big Thunder Mountain. Mm-hmm. And the last one is the Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage.
What?
So that toad that he was actually Finding Nemo?
Yes.
Wow.
Where's the one where there's a train, where you're trying to get away from a train in the ride?
You
are right that it is Toad. Mr. Toad.
Okay.
Plus, I believe that's a horn.
Plus, I think the bell in Haunted Mansion should count because that was ding-a-ding-a-ding. Like, it actually is a bell.
You've got me questioning if that's right. So
I think we get an extra
get a nice pat on the back for probably having that one right.
So for question 2, since we got 4 out of the 6, we get 2 points?
Sure. Okay. 2 points sounds fair.
And then for the second one, we got all of them except
4 out
for 1,
of 6,
right?
So
no, you did not get them all right.
What did we get?
You flipped the big boats. The first one is the sailing ship Columbia.
Really?
Oh, yes. The second one is indeed Big Thunder Mountain. The third one is indeed Disneyland Railroad. The fourth one is the Mark Twain Riverboat. Number 5 was the Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage. And number 6, you correctly guessed as Casey Jr.'s Circus Train.
So we got 1.5 points for that one.
Yes. And our last question from Dylan H. Though the attraction is extinct in the resort, what attraction could you hear this music as you exit the attraction? Tay got it right with Honey, I Shrunk
Good
the
job.
Audience. For those of you who are curious, based on their discussion, it closed down in 2010. So fairly recently, I feel like. I remember going on that during family trips to Disney World when I was growing up. So
I remember wanting that attraction to come to Disneyland for so long, and then it finally did, and I went on it a couple times, and then I was like, okay, I've been on this now.
Mm-hmm. Some good stuff this week. Let's keep it going. Keep this good trivia stock going so I can keep asking them fun questions and making them think every week. You can send me an email. It is trivia@dlweekly.net.
Yeah, and please, please, please send some because I believe next week we're producer Vern is going to be giving us some trivia. And then, so in the new year, producer James needs a fresh set of questions. So please send those in as soon as you can.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.